Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this platform of change meeting about the Alistair Sullivan talks. And without further ado, I'd like to hand over to Trevor England, who, of course, is slightly smarting from what happened in the last few moments of a rugby match. I'll hand over to Trevor to introduce the panel, just with one rider, which is apology from Orna Young. He can't make it tonight, unfortunately, to join us. She's lost her voice. She is very angry about the fact she couldn't make it tonight. She said she was even more angry about the fact that she, as she put it, that we had to bring in Richard Haass because our politicians couldn't sort out this problem ourselves. Okay, so over to Trevor and to our distinguished panel.
Thanks, Robin, and thanks for all the work you've done in putting this together, and thank you all for coming here tonight. And I don't want to talk about the rugby yesterday. That's in the past. I want to look to the future. But I wouldn't particularly like to thank our panel guests for being here tonight. And it is a look at the discussions that are happening around, chaired by Richard Haass, on how we deal with some of the issues that face us in Northern Ireland, particularly in relation to flags and parades, and then dealing with the criminality of the past, whether it be the state or whether others who acted in that past, and how we manage that in a way that actually helps us deal with the future and create a different future. And it is about embracing the future. If I just read a couple of things just to maybe hopefully set the tone for the evening. And some nearly 10 years ago, Mick Fielty of Slugger O'Toole and David Stephen and myself wrote a small pamphlet about the future of unionism called A Long Peace. And we're looking at just one aspect of it, and it could be written not only for unionism but also for nationalism and for the whole of society here, in which we said that ultimately what the people should seek is a diffusion of authority between past, present and future. While many societies are growing fast, Northern Ireland is still growing old fast. Many society, or Northern Ireland, is still comparatively young, with nearly one in three of its people under 20. However, it too is aging as birth rates fall, and over the next few decades, its school rolls will drop, and its labour force will grow. According to David Bloom, this demographic transition offers both peril and promise for societies who embrace the future. A demographic dividend is on offer. If youthful potential is harnessed, the economy will expand and society will be strengthened. But societies that stagnate will face equally serious problems and penalties. Unemployment will rise, as will crime, political unrest and social disintegration. Collecting the dividend means valuing future potential over current certainties. Education must be paid for today to release tomorrow's potential. Existing jobs must be lost in order to create more productive ones in new industries. Old ideas must be challenged by the ideas of rising generation. And unionists and nationalists must ask themselves how committed they are to renewal. Do we wish to fight the old battles or the new ones? Do they prefer the risks of a long peace or the certainty of a long war? And so as we look at the issues that we are facing and the Haass discussions, it is really a discussion as to whether or not we have a peaceful future or not. Is there a danger to the society in getting to where we are now? Tremendous grace has been shown by many in our society. And is it a risk that we waste that grace and in doing so destroy hope? Can we work to solve those problems in a constructive way so that we all do well? And finally, I draw attention to that great philosopher, Captain Blackadder. And it might be strange to turn to him as Captain Edmund Blackadder in Blackadder Goes Forth. But it provides an example of the risks if we do not grasp the opportunity that we currently have to consolidate peace when we reflected on the cause of World War I. And if you recall that particular incident, his able servant Baldric said, "The thing is, the way I see it, these days there's a war on, right? So there must have been a moment when there was not being a war on went away, right? And when there being a war on came along, so what I want to know is, how do we get from one case of affairs to the other?" To which Captain Blackadder simplified the question and asking if he meant, why did the war start? George the Lieutenant then added his contribution, saying the war started because of the vile Hun, his villainous empire building, to which Blackadder pointed out that the British Empire covers a quarter of the globe, while the German Empire consists of a small sausage factory in Tanganyika. I hardly think we can be entirely absolved from blame on the imperialistic front. To which George responded, "Oh, no, sir, absolutely not." He also referred to Captain Blackadder being mad because he was trying to pretend to be mad at the time so he could avoid having to go over the top. Baldric then added his contribution to the debate, saying, "I heard it started when a bloke called Archie Duke shot an ostrich when he was hungry." Blackadder said, "I think you mean it started when the Archduke of Austria of Hungary got shot." However, Baldric insisted there was definitely an ostrich involved. Captain Blackadder then said, "But the real reason, and this is the important point, but the real reason for the whole thing was that it was too much effort not to have a war." And sometimes when you look at the future, you worry that it's maybe too much effort not to do what is needed to build a stable society here. And it's something that we all maybe have to consider. But anyway, we start, and at this end we have Maureen Hetherington, and we have Brandon Hamber, and Peter Osborne, Dominic Bryan, and Dr. Reverend Leslie Carroll, many of whom I'm sure are well known to you. And I'm going to ask each of them to say something about their views on the issues that we face, for some 3 to 4 minutes, and then once they've all made their contribution, I want to open it up to you to actually make your contribution, ask a question. I would be grateful if when you do stand up you say who you are, and we try to keep questions and any statements reasonably short if that's possible. But Leslie, if I could start with you, if you don't mind, Reverend Leslie Carroll, and she's the minister in Fort William and McCrory in North Belfast, has tremendous experience in the issues that face that part of the world and Northern Ireland in general. She was part of the group looking on the Eames-Bradley panel that were looking at the issues of how we deal with the past, and she's been involved in the Presbyterian Church in Ireland on their political and government committee, and she's heavily involved in cross-community work. And so Leslie, if you could maybe start us off. Thanks.
Okay, Trevor, thank you very much, and thank you for the invitation to be here. I love the way we were told 5 minutes and it's just dropped to 3 or 4, so forgive me if it's 8.
You are a minister.
Flags, parades, and dealing with the past. The flags protest and the whole issue around all of that, I have a particular view of that. My view of that is that when we signed the peace agreements, it was intended that this society would move forward towards the shared future that we'd all hoped for, and that in that process there would be a new shared identity begin to be created so that people could move from the old identities into something a little bit new. And that might have been a long journey, but at least it would have been started. But in fact, the flags protests indicate to me that that journey really has not been started for a whole lot of people, and for a whole lot of reasons. And therefore, we have to take it seriously, not just in terms of addressing flags and emblems head on, but in terms of that wider issue, which is exposed, I think, through the flags protest. Parades, I think, were always part of that issue, but in a much lower key way, if you like. And so, I mean, Peter is the expert, so he'll say all that's necessary to say, but in a sense, the parades issue has been strengthened by the flags protest, in my view. And all of this comes from an inability within our society, and not just at the political class level, at all levels, to deal with the past. So I think that the inability to deal with the past has created a kind of a becalmed feeling a calmed politics where nobody's willing to do very much to bring a breath of air to the thing and move it on because nobody's sure where that would end up. I think the Attorney General's intervention last week was nothing short of a surprise. Nevertheless, I also think it's a debate that needs to be had. But my worry is that it's very unlikely to be had now because of the way in which it came about. I'm not committing myself to his view in saying that. All I'm saying is that there's a debate that needs to be had. Where that leaves me is back with Eames Bradley. And of course, I would say that. But I do think that Eames Bradley offered a way forward which reflected the vast amount of consultation that we did across society and therefore heard all the voices that are there. And what we tried to piece together was something that would match those voices in part. None of them could be matched in full. So it was to provide a step on the way, if you like. I suppose the other big worry for me at this point in time is the lack of uncovering of the realities of the debate. So we bandy things around without really looking at them to see what we mean. So, for example, over this last week, we've heard things like families are not going to get justice. So tell me how you know that. Where's your hard evidence? So in Eames Bradley, what we actually proposed was a review of investigations which would help families to know what the potential was for the conventional justice system. But now we're making all these assumptions. That was one thing. I think Eames Bradley also secured the right of families to choose, and we've heard that very strongly from victims over this past week. If I want justice, well, do they have a moral right to hold on to that view? I think that they do. So we provided a system by which they would decide if they wanted to move into a truth-telling process or not, whether they wish to stay within the conventional justice system or not, but that they would make that decision on an informed basis. So in my view, Eames Bradley secured the dignity of the law under international standards, while also securing the dignity of this society and its members, all of its members, by adopting an immunity mechanism, by enabling victims' choice, by providing also a reconciliation forum through which wider societal issues would be addressed. And it was our view, and it remains my view, that unless we do something about the context in which the conflict occurred, the dynamics that were around it, the relationships that weren't around it, perhaps, would be a better way to put that. Unless we do something about all of that, then the potential for it all to happen again remains. So I think we need to move to a place where we really get on with this. Flags and protests, or flags and parades, could become something else if we don't, because of the toxicity of the past. Also think the engagement of civil society is critical. We didn't find a whole lot of that during the Eames Bradley process, but we're in a different place 5 years on. We have public appointees, for example, who are trying to do a job, and they know the toxicity of the past, and they could bring a whole new dimension to the debate, in my view. Better stop, Trevor Haddock.
Okay.
I'm okay. I do think that a big push around civil society would be a critical thing to move us on here. I hope that those folks are engaging with Haas in a way that they didn't engage with us. So, for example, we tried to secure the engagement of the business community. They weren't interested. 5 years later, we've got Take Back the City, so the business community is more interested than it used to be. We tried to secure the engagement of the broad education community. Nobody except the integrated education sector was interested. But here we have this becalmed thing happening in education as well. We can't make a decision on a way forward on that. So maybe the educationalists are getting involved now. We've got commissioners on parades, children and young people, victims. There are two others, human rights. They have a view of the world that I think needs to be brought into this debate, and the sooner the better.
Thank you very much, Leslie. We then move on to Dr. Dominic Bryan. And Dominic is a director of the Institute of Irish Studies at Queen's University and chair of Diversity Challenges. He's an anthropologist, researching political rituals, commemoration, public space, and identity in Northern Ireland, and has undertaken extensive research into the use of symbols and particularly flags. So, Dominic, we look forward to your comments.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and thanks for the invite. I feel like I've been studying this stuff. Well, I have been studying this stuff for now 22 years. I've been to every 12th of July, bar one. That's because I was sitting watching a cricket match at Lord's with Brandon. And it's funny, flags, parades, dealing with the past, all linked. I think it's a good thing that they're linked, actually. I think they are all linked. And in some ways, I think the fact that I would throw in bonfires and memorials and all of those, I think there is a link between them. However, I do think the issue of dealing with the past is of a different order to the flags and the parade stuff. I think there's a sort of practical legal basis around dealing with the flags and parade stuff, which is a slightly different sort to the dealing with the past, which is a much bigger scope. So that whilst I'm pleased that they're all being looked at in the same way, I hope that when Haas comes out, there is some understanding that two of these are fairly small legal areas. They need to be connected, but they're very different from the larger sort of philosophical scope of dealing with the past. Over the years, what I've tried to do is produce some sort of evidence base to what is taking place to try and understand the big scope of things. I don't know that I've been that successful, but I thought I'd throw out a few pieces of evidence. I know that Peter's got a few pieces of evidence there as well, but I think putting things in context is quite important. And this is one of the areas that I thought I was going to look at parade numbers. Scotland have a problem with parades. And at the moment, the police are talking to the Loyal Orders about stopping the Loyal Orders doing return parades, all right, because of the drain on police resources of the number of parades. Okay, so let's put that in perspective. In Scotland, you have 4.25 million people. They have around 1,700 parades a year, of which about 60% are Loyal Order. All right, 1,700. We have 1.8 million people, and we have around 4,500 parades a year. We are, frankly, being overwhelmed with this. Now, that puts the whole debate, I know, in a different perspective, because a lot of the arguments about is how we've been losing our Britishness, and these things are under threat. And I was just talking to Peter, and we reckoned that there was a figure from 1985 of the number of parades in 1985 of about 1,800 parades. So the number of parades that we have has gone up astronomically. And yet, there are people standing at the other end of this town with a sign about cultural apartheid. That is astonishing. That is absolutely astonishing that at one point we have people who believe that they're not getting their rights when the amount of parades we have has doubled and tripled. It's astonishing. So I think we must think about the ways we're looking at some of this and the questions we're asking ourselves. Because what we see is something that's totally natural. We are seeing a conflict within public space, and all societies have conflicts within public space. We are not alone in this. Any place you want to look, you will find tensions. However, what do we know? We know we have a divided society, and therefore, those sort of conflicts are going to be accentuated. And also, in a process of change, we're going to see that conflict increase and not decrease. Okay, we're bound, in a way, the fact that most of our conflict now is around protests and parades and symbols is, to an extent, an improvement on where we were prior to 1998. It may not always feel that way, I understand that, but in some respects, I'd much rather have people protesting every Saturday outside the City Hall than I would the sort of things that were taking place in the 1970s and 1980s. Now, there are risks involved, but at least we're now within a public arena of parade and protest that is seen as normal in a democratic process. So let's not be too hard on ourselves. No, let's not panic too quickly about what we're seeing. I don't think we're in a worse position now than we were 10 years ago. All right. But what we do have to face up to is that there are certain practices around that are creating significant difficulties. And we have to think about how we try and overcome them. I'll leave for others to talk about the parades thing, although parades disputes existed a long time before the Parades Commission. Anybody who thinks that just by changing the nature of the legal system we have that this is going to go away, how many months after getting rid of a Parades Commission would it be before somebody says, oh, I wish that Parades Commission was coming back? I'd give it 6 or 7 weeks before it happened. The flags issue, which is the one that I've been most engaged with, the flags issue, we have seen an increase in the amount of popularly used flags. All right, and they are used as a mechanism to mark territory. They are not simply being worked on a commemorative basis. They are not just about identity. Otherwise, we wouldn't have seen such an increase. All right, they are used often by young men to mark space. Young men to mark space. There are not loads of women putting flags up. These things should be noted. All right, they mark particular sorts of space. And people sort of, no heckling there. Not yet. And people sort of know this. They know this because when you do attitude surveys, 60% of people think that Union flags and tricolours on lampposts demarcate paramilitary space. Not that they're national flags, but that they are paramilitary markers. So we have a real issue here to deal with. My time's up, but I just thought it'd be interesting to throw out some of the structures around which these things are taking place at the moment.
Thanks very much, Dominic. Big and challenging on some of those views. Can we claim the flags back, maybe, as one? They're both meant to be inclusive. Next one is up is Peter Osborne. And I always wanted to ask Peter, did he actually apply for that job? But he's been involved in good relations, cohesion, community enablement and development work for over 20 years. As you all know, he's chair of the Parades Commission and is a Northern Ireland committee member of the Big Lottery Fund. He's currently a non-executive director of Extern and Extern Ireland and a voluntary review panel member of the Peace Programme. He served as an elected member of Castlereagh Borough Council for 12 years, from 1993 to 2005. And he's married with one son and was brought up in Ballybean and has lived in Belfast all his life, and I'm sure he's committed to Belfast. But Peter?
Thanks very much, Trevor. And yes, I did apply for the job. It's probably the most thankless job that I've ever done in my life. But I would encourage every single person in this room and outside to apply for that sort of job and any other job, because it's about trying to manage some of the most difficult issues that we have. And anybody who wants to move forward constructively needs to try and play whatever role they can. Dominic said parades issues have existed for some time. I have a poster in my office at home, an original poster issued by the Lord Lieutenant of Ireland in, I think, 1868, banning parades around Ebrington for a period of 6 months on the grounds of social order and other language that is exactly the sort of language that we use today. Parading and issues related to parading are a manifestation of the divisions in our society, and those issues will be... Will come to the fore through parading and other street-related issues, as we've seen over the last year or two, as we have seen over the last number of centuries. And I think it's up to us to try and make sure that the next number of centuries and decades we don't have some of the same issues. On the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's speech, I Have a Dream speech, I decided to go away and have a read of that speech again. And I have to say, it is just poetic, the speech itself, and has all sorts of really important connotations for social justice and anybody trying to live together in a more integrated way. Apart from the stuff in that speech that we all remember, the passage that stands out for me is whenever King looks into the crowd of 250,000 people, 1 in 4 of those people are white, and he talks about how important that is. Why those people are there, because they've realised that their futures are related to the futures of the black people in that crowd, In other words, social justice and the freedoms that they were after will impact upon the white population. The quality of life, the sort of society they live in, will be about how those communities live and work together. And he says, we cannot walk alone. And in Northern Ireland, we cannot walk alone. How we relate to each other in parading terms or the past, how we relate to each other about flags or interfaces, and whether more interface peace walls go up or not will depend upon how we get on together. And if we decide as a society to walk alone, if we decide that unionists and nationalists and republicans and loyalists will look after themselves and not try to reach out and work with other communities, then the issues that we face today will be the issues we face in 10 years and 20 years and 50 years and 100 years. And somebody will be sitting in a room here in 150 years saying, I've got a determination from a parades commission in 2013, and by goodness, it looks the same as the sort of determination that we're issuing now in 2150. We can't walk alone in this society. We've got to find ways. We've got to find the courage to be able to walk with each other, reach out the hand and understand each other. Work together to try to overcome the problems that we have. I know I'm here to talk about parades more than anything else. Let me build on Dominic's statistics a little bit. The latest statistics we have for 2012-13, the financial year, which is relates to the annual report that the Commission releases. So these are the latest statistics. In that year, just under 4,500 parades. Of those, just over 2,500 were Loyal Order or Loyalist parades. That's a 3% increase on the previous year. 176 were Nationalist or Republican parades, and the rest were charity events or civic events or pride parades, not related to the green and orange issues. Let me just say those again. 4,500 parades, 2,500 Loyal Order or Loyalist parades, a 3% increase in the previous year. A 30-odd percent increase in loyalist parades in the last 30 years. And I suspect if you go back to the 1960s, before the increase of the band culture, it's a huge increase in the number of parades, as Dominic has so eloquently outlined, over the last 40 or 50 years. This isn't a culture under threat. This is a culture where there have never been more parades than there are at the minute in Northern Ireland. And it's increasing. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that's the fact. Those are the statistics. That's where we are at the minute. We're also told as a parades commission, well, we're not, don't explain ourselves off well enough. Well, we explain ourselves fully and completely when people come in to see us. We attend meetings like this whenever we're invited to talk about parading. I don't think either Brian or myself or any of the other commissioners have turned down a single meeting over the last 3 years, and we're very happy to go out and engage with people in this sort of way. We went up to Stormont when we didn't need to engage with the committee. We've engaged with all political parties. We've gone to party political conferences, and yet I still hear people say to us, ah, we never hear from you. Ah, you don't come out and talk to us. The other thing about the statistics is this. We're also told we're draconian. Well, of those 4,500 parades, the number that are deemed contentious is 226 from that year out of 4,500. 51 of those 226 relate to a weekly parade by Portadown District from the church to the bridge, 100 yards or so. The same parade, the same determination issued. Leave that aside. Sorry, Trevor, just give me 30 seconds more. Take that as one parade and one decision. You've got about 175 contentious parades out of 4,500. Of those 175 contentious parades, the Parades Commission does absolutely nothing on 24%. Nothing. Lets them go, no restrictions, nothing happens to 24% of the 175 out of 4,500. 40% of the 175 have a route restriction applied. That's around about 75 or 80 parades with a route restriction out of 4,500. Is it draconian? Absolutely not. Is it a commission looking to get involved? No, it's not. And the point of that is, why, and I very much do welcome the Haas initiative. If it's successful, we'll be the first in the queue to say, what can we do to facilitate the outcome? I think it's very important. Local politicians, local people take ownership and responsibility for these issues. But the legislation is only going to go one way, I think. It needs strengthened. Because there are a number of issues, which we'll come to maybe as we go through the discussion, where the legislation at the minute really does need seriously looked at and strengthened. So
Sorry, Trevor, I've overrun.
Well, thanks for that, Peter. I appreciate that.